afternoon at 3 o'clock, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday, May 25th, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about Saturday's Hershey's Track and Field meet with guest Jess Brown from the Zagron Youth Center. We'll also get you inspired to catch the last weekend of Bigfoot the Musical at Perseverance Theater. That and a few other surprises. Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, cloudy skies with a chance of rain, low temperatures around 45 degrees, south winds up to 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Forecast for Saturday looks like rain with high temperatures around 55 degrees. Forecast for Sunday, cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 57 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Teaching about Montana's tribes in the classroom is the goal of the state's Indian Education for All program. Montana Public Radio's Katrin Fry took a visit to a classroom where they learned about the Blackfeet Nation.
And after they were all created, they were all given the same instruction.
Robert Rides at the Door says that instruction was to treat each other well and take care of each other. He's talking about creation stories with a classroom full of fourth graders. Rides at the Door says he taught science at a Catholic school, talking with students about Darwinism alongside Christian and Blackfeet traditions. He says sharing these different perspectives is an opportunity to start conversations.
And having young people like the fourth grade here being part of that, I think that we give them a real opportunity to view different things other than just having one staunch way of saying that this is what happened. I think that's what education is about, is creating those opportunities and let them examine them and let them judge for themselves.
Fourth grade teacher Mimi Basden says each grade at the school studied a different Montana tribe.
Quilts of knowledge is what we put together and then share that information as a whole school. And so the intent was to gain a wealth of background knowledge for both staff and students.
Montana's Indian Education for All project aims to have public school classes incorporate teachings about Montana's Native cultures into their curriculum. For National Native News, I'm Katrin Fry reporting from Kalispell, Montana.
The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs focuses on programs and services for Native veterans. Thursday's hearing included testimony by Cheryl Cosley, chair of the National American Indian Housing Council, who addressed the severe housing shortage impacting veterans. A survey showed many Navajo households include at least one veteran, and 20% of the homeless population in Minnesota are American Indian. Cosley called on lawmakers for assistance. The New Mexico Business Outreach Center is helping veterans, including Native American veterans, get into business. Director Joseph Long says the center provides counseling sessions and gets information out to communities. Long says there's a new program called Veterans Business Outreach Center, or VBOC, on the road, which will be going to more than 24 places across the state.
And that will include places like Farmington and Gallup, which is very close to the res, and then we will be coordinating with the tribal leadership to involve them in the Veterans Business Outreach Center on the road events that we have. We will go to a place like, let's say, Gallup, working through the Gallup Chamber of Commerce and the Native American Chamber of Commerce that's represented in that area, and have them sponsor a breakfast that we will pay for, and then we will do a presentation of what we do, the services we offer, and then we'll spend the rest of the day doing counseling sessions on a walk-in basis for folks that want to talk about how to start their businesses.
Long says there are many initiatives for Native veterans, like tax incentives and hub zones used to determine government contracting for new businesses. He says the Outreach Center would like to work more directly with tribes and Native veteran entrepreneurs. The center was reaching out to Native Americans this week at the 6th Annual New Mexico Native American Economic Summit in Albuquerque. During this month in 2009, Otoe, Missouri, tribal veterans were honored with the War Mothers Memorial in Red Rock, Oklahoma. The tribal chapter of the National Organization of War Mothers holds annual Memorial Day and Veterans Day events. The chapter is considered to be the first Native American War Mothers chapter in the United States. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
I'm Billy Mills. As a grandfather and Olympic athlete, I know the importance of keeping kids healthy. The Children's Health Insurance Program in your state can provide your child additional health coverage, such as dental care, vision care, and emergency services. Enrolling your child can also help maximize health resources at your travel clinic. To learn more, contact your clinic or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW or visit insurekidsnow.gov.
Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is just about 3:06 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Last Wednesday, we presented a few podcasts produced by the CARES program, thanks to teacher Christy Dillingham. Didn't get to them all. We got one more left. I thought I'd play that today.
Welcome to another episode of Southeastern Botany. This week, we'll be talking about poison water hemlock. Juneau is home to many wild and exotic plants, some edible and some not. One of the least edible of them would be poison water hemlock. It contains a deadly toxin called cecotoxin that causes stomach pains, nausea, vomiting, weak and rapid pulse, violent convulsions, and eventually death. Though, the most immediate and recognizable symptom is a rapid onset of seizures. Poison water hemlock grows all over Alaska, most specifically Southeast Alaska. It tends to favor wet habitats alongside ponds and streams, in marshes or swamps, or areas that are swampy at least part of the year. This modest-looking plant is unspectacular and unassuming. Many of the fatal poisonings are caused partially because it looks strikingly similar to another edible plant called Angelica. The plant's toxin is in a resin contained throughout the plant, but its highest concentration is in the root. Inside the root, the concentration of cecotoxin is so high that it only requires a walnut-sized chunk to cause fatal poisoning. Though this plant is extremely dangerous, you can relatively easily avoid poisoning if you know what to look for. Poison water hemlock's edible doppelganger, Angelica, has a dense, stiff, and mostly flat-topped flower umbel, and poison water hemlock's flower umbel is loose and airy, more like a firework and less like the head of cauliflower or broccoli. Angelica's leaves are wide, with veins that go to the tip of the serrations, while the poison water hemlock's leaves are slender, with veins that go to the notches of the serrations. Angelica will have an enlarged base of stem leaf that hugs the plant and has wavy edges and a distinctively ribbed stalk. Alternatively, the poison water hemlock will have a slightly enlarged and clasping base of stem with a smooth and faintly ribbed stalk. This plant is a real threat to people, but with a little knowledge, you can protect yourself and others from a potentially tragic and untimely end. This has been Southeastern Botany. Tune back next week for a new episode on the medicinal properties of Devil's Club.
To Instructor Christy Dillingham and all the students involved in the podcast presentation. Also, Riley Woodford, who helped out in the meantime.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 25th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "Live in the sunshine, swim the sea, drink the wild air. Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. Ralph Waldo Emerson, born Boston, 1803, came from a family of Unitarian ministers, went off to Harvard Divinity School, was ordained, got married, he was happy, became senior pastor of a Unitarian church in Boston, and 2 years after he got married, his wife Ellen died of tuberculosis at the age of 19. Emerson was devastated, began to have doubts about the church, took a leave of absence, went on vacation in the mountains of New Hampshire, and by the time he returned, he decided to resign. Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "Finish every day and be done with it. You have done what you could. Some blunders and absurdities no doubt crept in. Forget them as soon as you can. Tomorrow is a new day. You shall begin it serenely and with too high a spirit to be encumbered with your old nonsense." And it's the birthday of the poet Theodore Rethke, born Saginaw, Michigan, 1908, to a family of florists, greenhouses in their backyards. Rethke went off to Harvard, started writing poetry, taught at the University of Washington. He was a big man, 225 pounds, tried to talk like a gangster, manic depressive, drank too much, wore fur coats, drove big cars, and was a memorable teacher. When he wanted his students to write a description of a physical action, he told them to describe what he was about to do, and then he climbed out the window, out onto a narrow ledge, and inched his way around the classroom, making faces at every window. And he made his students memorize poems so they'd have something to call on when they were going through a rough period in life. Here's a poem for today by Theodore Rethke, "In a Dark Time." In a dark time, the eye begins to see. I meet my shadow in the deepening shade. I hear my echo in the echoing wood, a lord of nature weeping to a tree. I live between the heron and the wren, beasts of the hill and serpents of the den. What's madness but nobility of soul at odds with circumstance? The day's on fire. I know the purity of pure despair, my shadow pinned against a sweating wall. That place among the rocks, is it a cave or a winding path? The edge is what I have. A steady storm of correspondences, a night flowing with birds, a ragged moon, and in broad day the midnight come again. A man goes far to find out what he is. Death of the self in a long, tearless night, all natural shapes blazing unnatural light. Dark, dark my light, and darker my desire. My soul, like some heat-maddened summer fly, keeps buzzing at the sill. Which I is I? A fallen man, I climb out of my fear. The mind enters itself, and God the mind, and one is one, free in the tearing wind. A poem by Theodore Rethke, "In a Dark Time," from Collected Poems, published by Knopf Doubleday, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the 3 most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by CenturyLink, linking Americans and Fortune 500 companies to what matters most. Learn more at CenturyLink.com. Written by Holly Vanderhaar and produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:14, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau. The Mudroom series concludes this month with a presentation that we will be broadcasting on Monday at 7 o'clock here on Focus on Community. You can listen now to get ready for that. The Long Bell was recorded last February.
our first one tonight is Dee
Loganbaugh.
Loganbaugh. Clearly, I've been around here a long time. And when asked for a bio, which we do of people, Dee wrote, "I am hopeless at beating my own drum." Dee's lived in Juneau around 20 years. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No.
Okay. Dee's lived in Juneau around 20 years. After 2 years in Santa Fe and 27 in Sitka. Dee came to Juneau because both her daughters and their families live here, but she still has strong ties to Sitka, where she has two sisters and their respective families. Dee owns Observatory Books, a store specializing in old books and maps of Alaska, but her store also carries other books and maps as well. Dee loves old maps and attends map conferences almost every year. Dee also researches and writes about Russian America, the period when Russia owned Alaska. Dee was asked if there was anything weird or bizarre to include in her introduction. She responded that living in Juneau in January might apply. However, those in Fairbanks, she said, really take the cake.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Well, this was the topic was for the love of it, and it seems the right place and the right time of year. So this is going to be Alaska Politics 1974, working for Jay Hammond. Okay. Well, I had gotten all fascinated with Mr. Hammond because I'd never met the man, but he was president of the state senate at the time, and he liked to make up doggerel poetry and recite it, and that's pretty irresistible. So when I heard he was running for governor in 1974, I thought, well, gosh, he can't be all bad. I like that. And I know what I'll do. I've never done anything in politics at all, but so I wrote a little letter to him. Those were the days when you wrote letters and put stamps on envelopes. And I wrote to his campaign headquarters in Anchorage. By the way, am I being heard all the way? Any problems? Okay, thank you. And I said, I don't know anything about Alaska politics, but I can make phone calls and I can send flyers. So, zingo, here came a letter right back. You are Jay Hammond's representative in Sitka. And I was horrified, terrified. Now what? What do I do? I don't know anything about this. So, okay. Well, he would be coming down, and they sent along a little suggestion about you might have a reception. Oh, okay. So I called, and this is in Sitka, of course. And in a very small town, everybody knows who the big party people are. So I called a couple of them and said, what do I do? He's coming. And they said, oh, well, that's pretty easy. You have a reception and you invite people. Okay. And how much do I charge? Oh, probably about $10 a piece. Oh, all right. So I sent out little letters to all the leading Republicans in town and invited all of them to come. And they set the date. And I spent a good bit of the day cooking. And then, unfortunately, the day, actually it was the day of the reception, here came all these polite little notes regretting they were not going to be able to make the reception. And I was going, oh, Christ, what am I going to do here? Well, okay. So I stopped by the newspaper and complained to my sister there and said, I don't know what I'm going to do. Gosh, well, I guess we'll just see who shows up. Okay. So I went back home, and here he came and landed on at the airport and picked him up and took him over because they had said, you will take him by the paper for a little interview. They might want to do that, you know, publicity. Okay. So I took him by, and my sister's husband said, well, I hear nobody's coming to the party tonight. Oh, thank you, Thad. So it had been changed from the fiesta to the fiasco. Well, not much of anybody did show up. Actually, Bella was with him, and a cousin of Bella's came by, and they had a nice chat, and I think there were about two other people, and that was sort of that. And then, to make things even nicer, they had, I'd called the radio stations, you know, efficient person, and said, would you like to do an interview with this candidate? And they said, oh, okay. So, well, I can't remember. Jay was busy. He had something else he really had to do, go someplace and speak to the NB or something like that. Anyway, so he said, oh, Bella will take over. And then he laughed heartily, as only husbands do when they have volunteered their wives for something they know they don't want to do. And Bella said to me, I can't do that. I hate speaking in public. And I said, well, it'll be okay, Bella. This is a small town, and people are very nice. They're a little radio station. We'll just walk over there. So we did, and Bella was saying, I just can't do this. I just can't. I said, tell you what, Bella, I will stand beside you, and you'll be fine. You'll be just fine. Okay, so we got over there, and we sat down in their little tiny reception area there at KIFW, and Bella was saying, I don't know if I can do this. Well, all of a sudden, look down the hallway there, there was this loud bang, and of course we both looked down the hallway, and there was a young guy coming out with his hair on end. Something had blown up at the radio station. I never found out what. So, okay. So Bella said, she clutched my hand. She said, now you are going to stand beside me when I'm being interviewed. And I said, sure I will. Okay. So we walked into the little room there, and the local guy, he was a sweetheart. He was a very, very nice guy, very bright. But for some reason, I never found out why, he decided to interview Bella using his Donald Duck voice. And I'm not good at Donald Ducks, but you can imagine, you'll have to imagine what that was like. You know? And Bella was answering very nicely. I think, you know, it's kind of hard to be too upset and shaken when your interviewer is using a Donald Duck voice. So we got through that all right. And then we went back. And anyway, then they left, and everything was fine. And they'd said, oh, the party organization in Anchorage had said, we'll send you some campaign materials. Okay. So they did, and here were some nice pins, Hammond, J. Hammond, for governor. Okay. So I went around giving those out to everybody, and there weren't a whole lot. And so I called them and said, hey, we need more pins. And they said, well, we don't have any more. We don't have any money. All right. So, this isn't exactly high stakes. And the money, we didn't have a super PAC. So, okay, well, then I thought, well, posters. So I made some, they sent me a master poster, and I copied it around. And I was going around and distributing posters. And if people weren't home, you roll them up, you stick them in the mailbox. And then I got a call from the post office saying, you know, it's against U.S. law, such and such, to put anything in U.S. mailboxes. Their penalties are, and they were listing them all off. I don't think it was life in prison, but it was pretty grim. Anyway, so I had to stop doing that. Well, then, I know, I'll just go door to door. That's what I'm going to do. So I'd go up and knock on the doors, and I said, hand people a poster if they were there, which they mostly weren't. But there was one place I started to go up, and there were these geese in the yard. And they weren't in a pen or anything. They were just in the yard. And I don't know if you've ever encountered geese, but I don't think geese are very political, because these geese were hissing and they were running at me with their wings out. And I thought, well, that's okay. They probably don't vote anyway. So I just left them there. Now, I have some more anecdotes, and let me just see what else I have on here. Oh, yes, I had asked Dick Eliason about what to do, because Dick, of course, had been, certainly in Sitka, and I think many places across Alaska, when somebody gets elected to the state legislature, it takes a lot to get them out. They just sort of keep getting reelected. So Dick was that way with from Sitka, so I said what to do, and he gave very good advice, like you send applications for absentee ballots to all the college students, because everybody forgets they're there, and they sometimes vote. And you send them to the little tiny places like Tenakee and Port Alexander and, you know, little bitty places. Because there again, when you have 20 people, you know, who cares? So they're always very pleased to get these. So I did that, and that was all very nice. And then the, just one more thing here. Let's see what else. There was something else. Oh, yes. The next thing that happened was that it was election time. And, of course, I was just, oh, Christ, this just meant everything to me. How was the election going? And some of you may recall, if you were listening to the radio as the results were coming in, that it was just going back and forth and back and forth. It was no landslide anywhere. And the results were finished, still unknown, and they finished counting them, and it turned out there were disputes. There were some ballots that were in dispute there, and a box had been put in the back of somebody's car in Anchorage, and those were questioned, and it went on and on. And finally, after several recounts, I think there were three, Jay wound up winning the governorship by 156 votes. And that figure is engraved on my heart. So he did become governor, and of course, in my very prejudiced opinion, I think about the best one we've ever had. The oil money was just beginning to show up, the serious, serious oil money, although a lot of people had been upset with the $900 million we'd already received, that somehow just sort of faded away, and there were bumper stickers saying, "Dear Lord, send us more money, and we promise not to fritter away this time." So that was one thing that got him in. Anyway, so there was. He was elected, and everything was just great. And I came over to Juneau for something and visited his chief of staff. And no, it was Bella, sorry, his wife. And Bella was a dear and is a dear. She said the main bedroom there at the governor's house was so noisy. There was something about the noise reflecting off the hill. So she was making a quilt. So she had this great big quilt that she was working on. A very practical person. Because, of course, Jay and Bella were from Bristol Bay. And Jay's power base, of course, was South Naknek at 120 people. So that, you know, a lot of people there. Anyway, he was, as I said, in my opinion, very good governor. And he was reelected handily. And then we had one more incident. Let's see how much time I have left here. I'm not used to this. Well, this was, as you may know, Alaska Day in October is celebrated in Sitka. And Sitka is under the firm impression, since that was the capital at the time, that everybody all over Alaska holds that day, October 18th, sacred. They just do all kinds of wonderful things. Well, I don't think so. In fact, I don't think much of anybody pays much attention other than Sitka. And that was the site of the transfer, of course, of Alaska. So, big, big deal. And they have a parade. And to give you an idea of the parade at that time, I remember, I think it was a 4th of July parade when a longtime Sitkan and friend was ecstatic. Guess what? The sun was out and we had 6 floats. So, everyone, well, they were celebrating. And, of course, usually we always called it the revenge of the Russians because the weather on October 18th is apt to be pretty grim. You know, it's blowing, it's raining, it's just sort of like Juneau, miserable. But Juneau doesn't have to have parades on that day. Well, Bella had come over because Jay couldn't, and she was staying with us, of course. So we walked over, and the parade was going by. Now, one of the most cheerful floats, and it may still be there every year, was the Pioneer Bar float. They had a real piano there, and the pianist is playing, and people are singing, and they had real beer, and everybody is very jolly. In fact, sometimes they would be having so much fun, after the parade was over, they'd come around again, and again, and usually another time. So I was watching the float to see what was going on this time and who I knew that was there. And it was all just very, very pleasant and jolly. And I had noticed that there was another Sitkin who had an old Model T or something like that. And he was part of what they call the Dirty Dozen. They call themselves the Dirty Dozen. They loved to do practical jokes. And they would go around doing practical jokes and all their friends around Southeast Alaska. They later became very famous for putting a bunch of old tires in the in Mount Edgecombe, which is a dormant volcano, of course, and they dropped them down in there, and then they set fire to them. And, of course, the smoke came rising, and it got a lot of people really excited. And then they flew over, had written in the sand there, happy April Fool's Day. So that was their most famous bit. Well, this bunch had, this was one of the Dirty Dozen in his old car, and he had his son with him. And sitting on top of the car, they had hired one of the women from the local nightclub affairs, and she's very young and pretty, and she's sitting up there cross-legged, and they had a boombox going in the music, and she's kind of swaying to the music. So I didn't better even notice that, but as I said, I was paying attention to Pioneer Bar Float. So I didn't know anything was wrong until then the parade was over. You know, this takes, 10 minutes. And these people started coming up to Bella and apologizing. And I, what? So I said, Bella, what's going on? And she said, oh, well, as they were going down the street, the woman lifted up her top and she didn't have anything on under it. And I said, well, Bella, why didn't you say something to me? And she said, well, it's the first time I've been here for the parade. Maybe that's what you do every time. Oh, boy. So that was an unusual Alaska day, I must say. And let's see if I had anything else. Just a second. Yep. I think that's about it. And as I was telling somebody, sometimes I finish, usually it's much longer than this, but sometimes I finish early, and you know, I've never had anyone complain. Thank you very much.
That was Dee Longenbell, recorded live at the Mudrooms event in February. This Mudrooms event this month was recorded by Mark Wheeler and friends, and was produced this last week. It's going to be aired on Monday at 7 o'clock on Focus on Community here on KTOO News. Thomas 331, you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Enrique Barapa of Rachel Land and two of the many people involved in Bigfoot and Other Lost Souls, performing at the Perseverance Theater this last weekend. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's start out with a little bit about your background, Rachel. You're from Texas?
Yes, I'm from Houston, Texas. And when I graduated from college back in 2006, I moved to New York City. And my second audition I went to an audition for Perseverance Theater. And I got a part in Tommy. And in January of 2007, I moved here to Juneau. And that's how I originally came here, and they brought me back for Yeast Nation in 2007 and this show, Bigfoot and Other Lost Souls, a musical fable.
What made you decide to take up acting as a career?
When I was about 6 years old, my brother was an actor and singer, and I got really jealous of him, and I decided that if he could do it, I could do it better. And so I decided to try my hand at it, and I've been addicted ever since.
Mickey, you're also from Texas, but
I'm originally from South Texas, about 5 hours south of Houston. But I also went to school at the small conservatory in St. Louis. Then I went and got my master's at the University of Texas, and that's where I actually met Florelina Logan Dino, who a lot of people know from town as well. Me and him got our master's there at UT, and because of him, actually, I came up and did Hair, which is the first show I did up here, and I've been coming back now 6 years. So, like I said, this is my 11th or 12th show up here now.
Why did you become an actor?
I don't get the thrill of that I get from acting anywhere else. It's really kind of a visceral thing that I just enjoy, and it's just one of those things that I don't know. I just really enjoy it. That's the only place I feel comfortable, like on stage.
Bigfoot and Other Lost Souls, I had the opportunity to see that last night, and I was very impressed. The singing is right on, and the acting is great. And
thanks.
Thank you.
Fun play to watch. Somewhat like The Empire Reviewer, a little confusing at times if you're not following along exactly as it goes along. So I'm going to ask you, for the benefit of those people who are going to be going this weekend,
sure,
a little bit about The Lost Souls and Bigfoot, who you never actually see in the production.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The thing about this show is that there is, I mean, I don't know if people are familiar with East Nation. It's a show that has a lot of dialogue and a lot of, even the songs have a lot of words in them. So there's a lot coming at you, which is, you know, sometimes difficult to keep up with. But I think The Lost Souls is important. I think everyone in the show is a lost soul. They're sort of all searching for the one thing that kind of would make them happy in life. And or what something that they're missing. My character in particular, I feel, has a, you know, it's kind of a hole from an incident that happened, and he's kind of trying to patch that hole up. So I can only speak from my perspective, but I think that everyone is on some sort of quest or mission. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bernie is my character, and The director explained that it was a spiritual quest that she was on to try to find something that she believed in. And, you know, for many people, it's if it's something spiritual, it's something about God. But for many others, it's something more palpable, something more earthly. And so she's searching for something to basically establish herself, to make herself believe in something again, to give herself momentum. And because she actually, in the beginning of the show, she sings about it. It kind of passes pretty quickly, but later on you realize that she lost a baby because of some birth control she was using because of an IUD, and she didn't even know she was pregnant. And so she's been in denial, and so she's searching, because she lost the thing she didn't know she had, she's searching for something else to kind of, like Enrique said, kind of fill the void.
And I think that's actually what brings our characters together, kind of like a magnet, is the fact that we both are kind of trying to fill this void, this loss that we both had. And I think a lot of the characters in the show are ultimately sort of searching, and that brings them together as well. And this kind of, it's crazy that all this happens in one day. The actual span of the show happens in the course of one day, but it does. So.
Can you go with the plot, if you could, please?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I'll take that one. Okay. So, as I said, Bernie is the character who kind of starts off the show. She's living in L.A. with her boyfriend, Max. And as I said, they got pregnant without knowing it, and she... some people might be familiar with. In 1981, there was a big case against an IUD company, a pharmaceutical company that made these IUDs, and they were faulty. And so a lot of women lost. They had neurological issues. They had physical issues. Many of them lost children because of it. Many of them became infertile. And so that's what happened to Bernie. She goes on this quest to try to get her story out there, and she does so by writing a screenplay. And because she's
about IUDs.
IUDs and about the story that she went through about basically losing her ability to have children and this thing almost destroying her. And basically she tries to shop it around L.A. It's rejected. But her quest actually causes her to basically ruin her relationship with her boyfriend, Max, who is an artist. So that's kind of how the play starts out. Bernie then takes a job as writing a documentary about Bigfoot in Bernie, California. That's just the first 15 minutes of the show. She goes on this quest after she meets Rudy, which is Enrique's character.
Right.
She meets him in a health food store, and she invites him along on this quest to go write a documentary about Bigfoot, where she meets many other kooky characters out in the woods.
Long-time actress Patricia Ho just did a great job with this. The hair was just great.
the 80s hair, yeah.
Who could forget
great.
Patricia's hair in the show? It defies gravity.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that couple?
That's an older Bigfoot couple. They basically had staked their life in a lot of Bigfoot paraphernalia. Bigfoot, they'd made a whole business out of it. Yeah, tours, even a bank, she says. But once Roger Patterson came around, he kind of robbed them of all that revenue.
Roger Patterson being
who filmed the legendary Bigfoot footage that everyone knows, that kind of one
mid-stride Bigfoot looking back at the camera.
So because of that, they basically fallen out, and they're trying. What they're searching for is sort of that, to find, you know, in monetary terms, kind of just be happy again. So they see something with an incident that Bernie brings up. They see kind of hope again, and also join on to this journey that we're all taking at the same time. So, but yeah, they do a great job.
And the FBI agents?
FBI agents are Jerry Demerit and Talisa Toll, who have also been in a few shows. And they're basically chasing after me, who had a run-in with also a pharmaceutical company. I set a couple of bathrooms on, exploded a couple of bathrooms, and so they're basically, I'm on the lam, and these FBI agents are coming after me. And throughout the show, Bernie starts to realize that I'm a wanted man, but still decides to keep me along. Just, yeah, but they're great too, Jerry and Salisa. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's good working with. That's the great thing about this cast is that, you know, a lot of us have worked with each other before, mm-hmm. and so that came very easily. Especially with a script like this, where we were given, you know, changes probably, you know, up until the last few days. We got a different color for every time they changed the script, and by the time you saw our script at the very end, it was like a rainbow of colors.
It was an Easter egg nightmare.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we would commit to doing the scene one way, and they would just change it completely. So you had kind of had to be on your toes and just be ready for changes. Mm-hmm. One song that I sing at the very end of the show, they didn't give to me till the last week.
And they're like, 2 days before the show.
It was two shows, I think, before we actually had a final dress. Mm-hmm. They're like, here's this song. Go ahead and learn. It was in other characters, but that was what was fun about it, but also what made it a challenge, you know, and all of us as a cast had to rise up to those challenges. And I think I'm really grateful to have worked with the people that we did, because everybody did a great job of kind of just taking it in stride and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Could you leave the theater not knowing if there's a big hit or not?
That's true. I think it's an individual decision that people make at the end of the show, because there kind of is a little. I don't want to give anything away, but there's sort of references to it being there. But you know, you don't know if it's the characters seeing them or, you know, the real deal.
Yeah. Well, how I kind of look at it is that with Bigfoot, believing in something can make it true for you, and therefore that gives you just as much power as actually knowing 100% that it's there, you know, just believing in something, the creed, basically, of having something that you can hold on to.
And we've all come across those people who believe in something so much that you know, you start to kind of second guess your own, mm-hmm. you know, beliefs. You're just like, well, you know, maybe they're right.
Yeah. And who are we to tell them that they're wrong?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So the last weekend at Bigfoot and Other Lost Souls, it's a musical, and everybody did a great job last night, a full house, and on a nice sunny evening.
Appreciate it.
What do you think this has to, you alluded to it just a few minutes ago, but what do you think this has to say to Juno audiences?
What does it have to say?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's, I mean, what I get from it is to not give up on your journey or whatever it is your mm-hmm. quest is. And that's the thing about some of these characters. They ultimately don't get what they're searching for, mm-hmm. but they don't give up. I mean, they continue just eye on the prize, mm-hmm. going after this thing. Even though, you know, sometimes I guess it doesn't always work out for them. But
right. The journey is the adventure,
yeah.
of course. And even if you don't get what you want, then you get what you journeyed. You don't get what you journeyed for, but the journey itself is the amazing thing. It's what you can learn from, and it's what you can grow from. And a lot of these characters, like Enrique said, they don't end up not giving it away.
Yeah.
But you know, they get to very, very dark places. But in the end, if you still believe in that thing that you believed in, if you still strive for it, you still reach for it, then you know. I think that it doesn't matter if you don't get it, you know, because just trying is half the battle, really.
And that's what's been interesting about even the process of this, because since it is a new show, I mean, we've been having to deal with that just in our own, you know, kind of personal life, like striving and getting past something and just moving forward and making it your own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've appreciated about working at Perseverance, is that they're really open to doing new pieces like this. You know, with all the you know, smudges that might come with it, and willing to work on those things and make it a better piece altogether.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the interesting part. Once the show's already figured out down the line, you know, I mean, that's great too, but this is, you know, the trenches.
It's a living script right now. It's a living, breathing thing, and it's constantly changing and growing, and that has been the beautiful thing about it is, yes, as Enrique said, like, it's definitely not perfect right now, but it has been such an amazing adventure with these people and with the script and the constant changes, and the audience is helping us
figure
everything
out
and help it to continue to change. And you know, there's going to be a remount next year at Anchorage, mm-hmm. in January and early February, And there's going to be even more changes then. And, you know, I know that this has been the 10 billionth draft of this show already, so I know that it still has a long way to go.
You know, because you've counted.
Yes, exactly. Took me a long time. Yes.
They put another Lost Souls performance this weekend at Perseverance Theater. If you need more information, perseverancetheater.org is a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Shows at what time? 7:30 both nights and the 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday?
Correct. And you can also go to Heartside Books, Jack, and 463-TIXS for tickets.
Ricky and Rachel, thank you for coming by. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No. I'm really grateful to be back in Juneau.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks for having us.
Summer classes start this week at the University of Alaska Southeast. Classes run throughout the summer, so there's still time to sign up. On-campus courses include Raven's Tail Weaving, Printmaking, Electric Vehicle Conversion, and Wilderness First Responder. E-learning courses are available in several subjects. The last day to register online is Friday, May 25th. More information at www.uas.alaska.edu or call 586-6100.
Time is 3:49, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our last guest is Jess Brown from Zagro News Center, talking about the Hershey's track and field meet going on this Saturday at Thunder Mountain High School. Jess, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me.
So you want to give us a roundup of the activities?
Sure. So tomorrow we are hosting our annual Hershey's track and field event, and it'll be at the Thunder Mountain High School track and turf field, as you said. And this year we're shaking things up a little bit. We're doing things a little differently, and so we'll be hosting the Hershey's events, which are for youth 9 to 14 as of December 31st this year. But in between those events, we'll also have all-comer events. And so that means moms, dads, competitive runners, anyone can come out and just get on the track and enter some fun events there.
So is there a charge?
No charge. The entire event is free.
Well, what kind of events are there in track and field competitions?
Well, we have all of the Hershey's standard events, anything from the 50-meter dash, 100-meter dash, and so on. We have some fun relays, the 4x100, and we'll also have all-comer events like a hula hoop relay or a water balloon toss. And then additionally, we'll have some field events such as the softball throw, standing long jump, and a running long jump.
Is this the second year you've done this?
No, actually, this has been going on for a long time. And, in fact, probably about 10 or 15 years ago, it was so popular that we'd have floods of people. It was a huge event, anywhere from 75 to 100 people, depending on the weather. And I think over the years, you know, kids have gotten involved in different things. And so we're really trying to bring some extra life to the event this year and encourage all community members to come out and have fun and just get out there and be silly or just have fun running or try something new or even just go for a time on the track. Yeah.
And it all starts at what time?
Well, if kids are registering for the Hershey's events, they can register through tonight at the Decorn Youth Center, and also tomorrow from 11:15 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., and then the actual meet will start at 1. And any all-comer events, there's no registration required. So, So moms, dads, brothers, sisters, they don't have to register.
What kind of prizes are there?
Well, if selected from this meet, we've had finalists go to the national meet in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where they get flown down and put up in a hotel, and they get to compete at the national level and also tour the famous Hershey factory.
And they get some Hershey's candy along the way?
Yes, absolutely.
And so you've also got some summer camps coming up?
We do. We still have some camp spots available in June for our Adventure Treasure Chest class, which will include things like kayaking or hiking out to Shaman Island at super low tide, and also a ropes course. And we also have another camp called H2 Awesome, where we'll be pairing up with the Orca program and doing just a bunch of fun water-related activities. Again, kayaking, water balloon fights, getting on some different water vessels, and maybe even some gold panning. And then, and most of our other camps have filled up, but I do believe we have some spots available in our Fun Runners Camp, which is in the end of July. And that, again, is just encouraging the fun spirit in running and taking the kids out for some adventurous things and teaching them some fun, interactive things along the way. So.
All right, and if you need more information about this, they can check out the Zekko News Center. What phone number?
At 586-2635, or check out our website at juno.org.
And for people who don't know where you're located?
We are located in the same parking lot as Centennial Hall and Bullwinkle's and the Jack. We're the building with the blue roof.
And Jess Brown, thank you for coming by. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Nope, it sounds great. Thanks, Jeff.
Dadeshi Truck Stand, the time is 3:57 and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau. We broadcast live at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ogbe area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Sursuna at 91.9. An excursion inlet and Icy Street here at KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also live online at www.ktuo.org. Coming up next Monday, Memorial Day will be featuring a blues special on Tuesday on June afternoon. Pat Moore will be your host. He'll talk with Ken Fix about Tuesday night's planetarium presentation. Jonas Slam will highlight how satellites are connected to the library. Albert Bass will be here with a preview of his talks next week. We'll learn about the changes at Gastineau Elementary with guests Kathy Unamura and Brenda Edwards. Edward is Almanac Bird Note Music and More next Tuesday on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain likely, low temperatures around 44 degrees, south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour in the evening becoming light and variable. Forecast for Saturday, rain, high temperatures around 52 degrees, light winds becoming southeast to 15 miles per hour in the afternoon. Saturday night, rain, low temperatures around 46 degrees, and Sunday looks like rain is likely with high temperatures around 54 degrees. And we have an answer to all things considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today. Have a great weekend.
Run for president by saying I solve this intractable problem by bringing conservative principles to bear.
The parallel lives of Mitt Romney and Barack Obama over health care policy. It's Friday, May 25th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Next, the health care issue and our Friday commentators, E.J. Dionne and David Brooks. Also, Spaniards appear to be losing confidence in the very community banks they trusted most.
Some years ago, we were being told that it was the best system in the world, and then suddenly it's like in the brink of intervention.
And a